Welcome to the Walder Sportscast with your host, Chris Walder.
Hello again, everyone. And I did not do that hello justice considering today's guest, but nonetheless, welcome to episode 51, the Lawrence Funderburk. Remember that guy? I'm sure you don't. Of the Walder Sportscast. I'm Chris Walder, and no, I have not passed Scotty Barnes on the Raptors' all-time scoring list, just give me a little bit more time there, but you could still find me on Twitter and Instagram at Walder Sports, and of course, give the podcast a rating and review when you're done here to help expose my voice to more listeners around the world. But before we get underway here, just a friendly reminder, as always, to check out our friends over at the DraftKings Sportsbook, the official betting partner of the National Basketball Association. New customers can bet just $5 on any NBA team to win their game, and if they do, they win $200 in free bets. DraftKings Sportsbook customers can also get some skin in the game with same-day parlays. Combine multiple bets from the same game for a bigger payout. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you like. Now download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TBPN. Bet just $5 on any NBA team to win their game and win $200 in free bets. If they win, you win with promo code TBPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an authorized sports betting partner of the NBA. Must be 21 years of age or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required, one per customer, restrictions apply, see DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. First off, just a quick shout out to my brother Jonathan. This is being released on Wednesday, November 10th, and it's his birthday today. He's turning 32 years old, so happy birthday, John. And I'll know if you listen to this podcast if you acknowledge this birthday shout out when I see you this weekend, but I think you do, and definitely will today because he's a massive fan of today's guest, as am I, of course, as I am of all of my guests. But today, especially, because joining me on today's program is the man, the myth, the hello himself. It's Jack Armstrong, returning for a second time to the Walder Sportscast. Couldn't be more appreciative of his time, especially since he was so gracious with his. We definitely got a lot in. We talked some Raptors, of course, got in some Frank Sinatra. And will Jack Armstrong put Blake Murphy through a table? Stay tuned for that doozy of a tidbit during the interview. But I didn't get one in last time since it was my first show in forever and a half. Apologies again, but if you haven't already, Casey Bannerman was my most recent guest on the Walder Sportscast. Artist extraordinaire, a talent which I will never have, but Casey has in spades. We obviously talked about his artwork and some Raptors ball, but there was a Jason Sudeikis photo with his mom that I just had to know about. So listen to that episode when you can if you haven't already. And if you haven't, what are you waiting for at this point? With all that being said, though, Jack Armstrong will be joining me after this short break. So keep it locked.
Perfect. Perfect.
Joining me now is Jack Armstrong, the legendary Toronto Raptors broadcaster, joining me for a second time here on the Walder Sportscast. Jack, thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Chris, my pleasure. Glad to be on.
I remember the last time you and I did a podcast together, actually. It was in July of last year, I believe, and I remember being so nervous at the time because outside of me obviously being just a massive fan of your work, I always recall my days working game operations for the Toronto Raptors over a decade ago, and I was just someone who tossed t-shirts into the stands, but anytime you passed me in the hallway, you always acknowledged me, you always said hi and asked how my day was going, and that always stuck with me, and I always appreciated that, and attitudes and positivity like that are far more welcome these days during these times. So Jack, I ask you, at a time when everyone is seemingly at each other's throats, whether it's over vaccination status or politics or what have you, do you find it any more difficult to be a positive person, or does that simply come natural to you?
Well, I guess my motto would be it's nice to be nice, right? And I mean, we all choose the path we want to take. I always say 10% of life is what happens to us. 90% is how we choose to deal with it. So you could choose to deal with it one of two ways, in a positive way or in a negative way. And I think the soul of my personality and the spirit of my personality is one of positivity and joy and having fun. And so I have a hard time being that other person where there are times I get angry and ticked off. Absolutely, we all do. But I think that it doesn't take much to say hello, good morning, how you doing, that kind of thing to people, and try to maybe bring a smile to someone's face. I was out for a run this morning, and every person I go by, I wave and say good morning, and most people respond. A few people just put their head down and keep walking, and that's their problem, not mine, and so if they choose to live that way, shame on them, and so be it. But I think it doesn't take much. So I appreciate you saying that, and but I think it's a very simple thing.
Well, again, I've always appreciated your kind-hearted nature and positivity. And seriously, it's so good to see you back at Scotiabank Arena for basketball in Toronto once again. I'm so personally happy that Tampa Raptors experience is over because that was brutal, and I hope we never revisit that stage. But now that you're back calling games in person, was there ever any hesitancy or anxiety on your part returning to the sidelines in front of thousands of fans? And perhaps it's not a matter of feeling safe, but more so not having done it for so long for such an extended period.
No, I'm excited. It's very exciting. I'm thrilled that we're back. I couldn't wait. I think doing games off of television is just such an incredibly difficult way to do it because you're not capturing the essence, the soul of it. I've actually had to tell the guys in the TV truck a few times to remind me to keep taking a look at the monitor, the TV monitor, because we'll be watching the game. But sometimes we'll show pictures on a TV based upon a story that we're telling or a statistical board that we're using. And I'm so happy to be back in the arena. I'm just watching what I'm seeing on the court. It's been so long because all I've done in the last 18 months is stare at a TV. So it's cool to not have to stare at a TV and stare at live action in front of you and the human interactions that play out. So I've actually had to remind them to kind of just say monitor, so that if we're referencing something on the TV itself, that I don't forget to reference it. So, but that I call that a positive problem to be back in the arena, because you get so many more insights. It helps your broadcast so much. Being able to be there in person and being able to get an essence and feel for not only your team, but the team that you're that is the opponent that night, and also news and notes around the league when you run into advanced scouts, pro scouts, personnel people, other broadcasters, media in the building. You get you get a rich sense of what's going on, not only between these two teams, but what's going on around the league.
Well, it's such a breath of fresh air to see you back down at the actual arena, calling games in person. And you'd have to say that the start of the season has been a fairly resounding success, considering, Scottie Barnes missed a few games, Pascal Siakam just returned against the Nets on the weekend, and there's so many new faces, of course. We're in this post-Kyle Lowry era of Toronto Raptors basketball. Knowing that we're entering these new stages for the franchise, heading into the season, Jack, what were your best case expectations? Like, with the roster made up as it is, what did you envision as being the minimum accomplishment for this season to be deemed a success?
Well, I felt like this team could compete for a playoff spot, and here we are now 11 games in when we record this, Chris, and they're 6-5. So to me, I'm thrilled with what I'm seeing so far. I'm really enjoying it, even in the five games that they've lost. In all five of those games, I've been able to find some really cool things as well that I like. So overwhelmingly, based upon the 11 games I've seen, with the pre-regular season, even the five in the preseason, sitting and watching practice at training camp, overwhelmingly, I'm you know, this they got talent. They got good players. Is a complete roster yet? No. But is there talent? And is there a plan? Is there a lot of things to build with? I would say, yeah. I think that, you know, they're not far off from being a pretty good team. I think they're a pretty good team right now. But they're not far off from being like night in, night out, where you're like, oh, my God, I don't want to play the Raptors tonight. And I think if you can get, you know, Pascal Siakam going now, and it'll take some games. Scotty Barnes has not been as good as he was before he got hurt. I think he'll get back in the swing of things as well. Yuta Watanabe hasn't played yet. So if you can get this group healthy, you know, I would say their margin of error is a little slimmer than maybe we've had in past years with the Raptors of late.
Right.
But if they're a healthy group, I think they're a tough out, and they'll be a really fun, entertaining team to watch all year.
That Scotty Barnes pick in particular, a player who, you know, I'm guilty of this myself, got a ton of undeserved criticism online during the draft because, you know, he was the wild card in what was widely considered a four-player draft this year. And it's early, but Barnes, with the exception of the last few games, of course, he was hurt. But I do feel he's blowing away expectations thus far. But when that pick was first made, Jack, what was your initial reaction to the selection and perhaps what it further emphasized about Masai Ujiri in particular, who is known for trusting his gut and thinking outside the box with his draft picks for a four-player draft, picking not one of those four guys?
Well, I don't know if it was ever a four-player draft. That's kind of what, you know, some internet expert might say.
Right.
But you know, in that draft room, and it's not just Masai, it's his entire basketball operations staff, those guys do their work. And they spend a lot of time traveling all over the world, not your country, the world, seeing players. And so when they sit around that room, it's a consensus. It's collaborative. There's argument. There's discussion. There's debate. And the thing that I respect a lot about Masai is that he trusts the gut and the opinions of the people he hires and lets them do their job. He empowers them. And to me, so when they made the decision to draft Scotty Barnes, they felt really, really good about what their coaching staff was about, what their development program is, what their G League is about, mm-hmm. and the track record they've had developing players here in Toronto, and Masai's confidence level in what he did in Denver prior to that, you know, in terms of bringing along young players and developing. So I think it's the entire picture. So I think they felt like when it came down to, is it going to be Suggs? Is it going to be Barnes? I think they said, hey, we can't look at what is. We have to look at what could be and what we think could be and what we think our system can do. And, you know, so you go – they look and say 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years out, which player do we think can make a greater impact in getting us to a point where we could be a championship organization? And on top of that, they drafted Malachi Flynn a year ago, a point guard in the first round.
Right.
You had Fred VanVleet. I understand that you were losing Kyle Lowry, but you ended up picking up another point guard in Goran Dragic. And maybe you had your eyes set on Delano Banton in the second round, which you end up getting, who's a point guard. So I think it's a lot of moving parts that are in play. But I would say, Chris, it really comes down to the fact that you got to go with who you think. Look at the Raptors, Isaiah Thomas taking Tracy McGrady right out of high school. Back then, that was counterintuitive, countercultural. A lot of teams very few were doing that. A few did, but very few were. And he felt like Tracy McGrady could be something really special, but there was going to be growing pains. Tracy ended up in the Hall of Fame, you know? So I'd say there were a lot of other people that missed on that. And again, that's the job of an executive, a basketball person, is to be able to project way, way out and say, what's this guy's ceiling?
I'm curious as well, Jack, you know, speaking about trusting your gut and going back to your own personal days as the head coach at Niagara, when you're watching games from the sidelines, and this can go back as far as you'd like as a Toronto Raptors broadcaster, do you ever have those moments where you're watching plays from either Toronto or the opposition and you think to yourself sitting there, well, maybe I would have done that differently? Because I feel like fans do that all the time, but you have a unique perspective as a former head coach.
Well, I try to first guess, you know, and I try to say it out loud, too. Like last week, I had a game in Washington, and Washington made an adjustment on the mid-screen and roll, and they were starting to double Fred VanVleet. And I said, hey, they got to get Precious Achiuwa out of the game, and they got to get Birch in the game because he's a better option if they double. VanVleet can throw him the ball, and he can make plays from that position. Right. And lo and behold, what happened? Nick Nurse brought Birch in, and Washington didn't change their strategy. They continued to double. VanVleet threw the ball to Birch, and like three or four plays in the next 2-3 minutes were made out of that. That ended up breaking the back of the Wizards. So now, most times I'm wrong. Occasionally I'm right. what I try to do is I try to first guess. And rather than reflect on it later, and there are many times I do, I try to say, hey, this is what I think I would do at this point, but who the hell am I? I was 100 and 154 as a head coach. So, but that's the great thing about these jobs now. They put ex-coaches behind the mic, and you go from idiot to expert overnight. It's the greatest scam going.
Has there ever been a time during your broadcasting career where you've had the itch to return to coaching? Like, has there ever been circumstances or a phone call made or anything along those lines where you were at least tempted?
In my early years, yes. In the last 15, 17 years, absolutely no. But I would say in my first, this is my 24th year with the Raptors. So I would say my first 7-8 years, I would say, yeah. I had many opportunities to go back and coach in college, particularly my first 5 years out of it. And each time something kept pulling me back to doing what I'm doing, because I was doing a lot of college television as well as the NBA with the Raptors. So it just kept growing. And my coaching friends were like, why would you be crazy enough to want to get back into coaching? This is a great gig you got. And then there were times, not only from a coaching perspective, but a management perspective in the NBA early on, that I was intrigued with it. And you still have that competitive fire in your belly, and you're young enough. But the longer I did it, the more comfortable and happy I became doing this. And it was leading to some good opportunities and an advancement. And you know, what's the old line? When you're happy, you don't mess with happy, right?
Right.
And so coaching's a hard life. You know, everyone sees 7:30, the glitz and glitter, the introductions, the ball going up, your name being announced. But they don't see the other, 21 hours of the day where your life is absolutely consumed by it. And in many ways, it takes a toll on you. Not only on you, but the people you love around you. And it's hard. So I've experienced that. I've been now, had the best seat in the house for the last 24 years around coaches and executives and players and referees and scouts and you name it. And I'm happy to have the seat I have.
I bring up coaching too, Jack, because there has been this online discourse about Nick Nurse specifically as of late and how much credit he deserves for the performance of this Raptors team. And some lead towards, you know, the personal growth of the players. Some give it to Masai Ujiri for simply building the team. And we just had, you know, Kevin Durant, one of the top players on the planet, say Nurse's schemes keep him up at night. Do you personally feel Nurse, in the grand scheme of things, gets the praise he deserves, or does it ultimately matter at the end of the day as long as the team is thriving?
No, I think he's really good. As a former coach, he's really good. I go into every game when I'm calling a Raptor game pretty confident that he's at the very least as good as the guy he's going against. And in the overwhelming majority of the cases, he's better than the guy he's coaching against. And that's coming from someone who has been a Division I head coach and has been in the NBA for 24 years as an analyst and has watched every coach operate in the league. I think he's one of the best in the league, if not the best in the league right now. He's really good. So what did Bum Phillips say about Don Shula? He could take yours and beat his. He could take his and beat yours. And I feel like Nick has that intellectual curiosity and that strength of just conviction and also flexibility to do the things that he feels he can do with the particular group that he has. And I think for Masai and his staff, they got a guy that will mold the team based upon whatever you give him, and he'll figure out ways to keep them competitive and make them competitive and help them win. I think, in the pros, coaches at times, don't maybe, particularly in basketball, I don't think coaches get enough credit. But I've seen a lot of teams in the NBA in my 24 years that, an owner has $120 million or whatever invested in a payroll, and he's got a novice coaching the team. What person, what CEO, what owner of a major corporation would ever put someone in charge of an operation that isn't qualified and isn't truly prepared for the moment? And I think when you look at Nick, he is a guy that, to me, if I were any one of the owners of the NBA and he wasn't coaching the Raptors, I would feel like this is a guy that I would want looking after my investment of over $100 million. And he is a professional basketball coach. And I think we see it too often in our league where people are thrown into those spots for whatever reason, and they don't have the understanding of how to really run a team. And teams try to prop them up by putting people with different strengths around them to counteract maybe what they lack in terms of experience. But it's still, to me, an important decision, and I don't think it gets enough respect. I think you see it in other sports too, particularly in baseball, where managers are just kind of like, it's all analytics now, and people don't really value that. I still think a coach makes a big difference. And are they going to take you from being really bad to being really good? No, but I think they give you a better chance of being competitive every night, and on some nights stealing a game or two.
Well, Nurse has certainly been a revelation here in Toronto. We're happy to have him here, just like we're happy to have you on the sidelines, Jack. I know you've been extremely gracious with your time. I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I do have some fun final questions to send you on your way.
You got it.
So, Jack, this is the all-important question. Which major sporting event happens first? The Toronto Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup, or the Buffalo Bills become Super Bowl champions?
Oh boy, I sure hope it's the Buffalo Bills. I think they're more positioned right now, respectfully, than the Leafs are. So I hope they are. They're very disappointing on Sunday against Jacksonville, but there's 9 games left, and this is when now maybe it's the best thing that ever happened to them to kind of get exposed a little bit and stop maybe smelling themselves a little bit and feeling too good about themselves, and recognize that the daily commitment, the habits, what goes into preparing for a game every day, every week. You win the games during the week. It obviously, I always felt like you'd go into the game. The calmest I was right before the game started, because it's out of your control now. You've either put the work in or you haven't done the work. And when you know you've had a good work week and you've prepared for that opponent, You might win, you might lose, but you know you're ready for the moment. And I think that that's what good teams do. And hopefully they grow from that experience. But I would say that.
Well, Sportsnet 590 The Fan's Blake Murphy was curious if you would ever put him through a table during a Buffalo Bills tailgate. I hear that's a tradition ahead of games. Fans reenacting wrestling moves.
Well, I would never do that. The people I tailgate with are a little bit more mature. But I've witnessed it many times. And I shake my head. And I laugh a lot. But I'm at a point in my life where the risk clearly and the reward, the risk assessment, I definitely err on the side of rewarding myself by not jumping through the table.
Jack, what's a more pleasant experience for you? Having an Irish coffee and enjoying the view at the Buena Vista Cafe in San Francisco, or drinking a pint and enjoying live music at the Kells in Portland, Oregon?
Both. I think it's incredibly difficult to even choose between those two. I will actually be in Portland this Sunday with the Raptors because we play there on Monday. So you can count on me being there at the Kells, dropping in there for a pint or two. No doubt about it. Unfortunately, this year I'm not on the San Francisco trip, so I won't be able to enjoy my Irish coffee at the Buena Vista. But no question, I couldn't even differentiate between the two. They're both, and I encourage everybody who does those trips to drop in and enjoy both because they're marvelous.
Does either hold a candle to the Brickyard Pub and Barbecue?
Well, the difference is when I go there, I can walk.
Yeah, big difference.
I walk from my house, so it's a big difference. But the great thing about the Buena Vista, though, in San Francisco is I always, as a tradition, take the trolley car there.
Right.
Because it's not, the trolley car stops, the last stop is at Hyde and Powell there. Right near Giardelli Chocolate Factory there and all that, and Fisherman's Wharf. So I always, as a tradition, I always take the trolley car there, and I just love to get a feel for the city, and I just enjoy it so much. So it's great. And that's the beauty of traveling, and that's a lot of the things that you miss. I mean, you miss being in the arena, but you also miss getting the experience of the city that you call the game in and the soul of the people that are there.
Jack, we discussed this on the last podcast we recorded, your infamous From Brooklyn to Toronto Christmas album with fellow broadcaster Eric Smith. And obviously Raptors fans would love a follow-up one day, hopefully, maybe perhaps this Christmas, who knows. But Jack, if you had to give me your personal Mount Rushmore of Christmas classics, the four quintessential holiday tunes, what would they be and why?
Wow. I would definitely say White Christmas would be a number one by Bing Crosby. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to choose from.
There is a lot to choose from. Blue Christmas, Elvis Presley. That's a good one. I'd have to have some time to think about that one. but I would definitely say number one would be White Christmas by Bing Crosby. I just think it's the movie's great. He sings it beautifully. Irving Berlin wrote the song. So I would say that would be number one. I'd have to have a little more time to think about numbers two to four. Definitely number one would be Bing.
Well, you win the question right there by saying White Christmas, a personal favorite of my mother, Joanne, so she'll be happy to hear that. But speaking of songs, Jack, I know you're a fan of the great Frank Sinatra, the Sultan of Swoon himself. And my grandmother, Pauline, God rest her soul, was obsessed with Frank Sinatra. And I know today's generation will likely never be overly familiar with his music. So if you, Jack, were trying to convert someone who hasn't heard a Sinatra song before into a fan, and you had to think outside the box, perhaps picking songs that weren't considered some of Frank's greatest hits, what song would you pick to convert a fan?
Wow, that's a great question. There's a beautiful song that he sings called All the Way. Mm-hmm. That's a great song. That's one of the nicer ones that he sings. You know, it's interesting. He sang Something, which is by the Beatles, a beautiful song by George Harrison. And he does a tremendous version of it that I'm a little surprised how good it is. But that's another good one. You know, the thing I'll say about him is that it's timeless music. I would say you could walk into a bar in 120 years, and if Sinatra's on the music, people will go, hey, man, that's really good music. If you fast forward another 300 years and you walk into a bar, I still think that music is just, it catches your ear and you go, who is that guy? That's right. Really good. So to me, that's the beauty of his music. And even for younger generations, when they are at an event or at a party or whatever, and that music's playing in the background, they're not going to ever say, what's that garbage on the air? They're going to say, oh, wow, that's pretty good stuff. And to me, I think that speaks volumes about just how talented and how versatile he was.
Well, my grandmother is looking down on me with proud eyes because I brought up Frank Sinatra on a podcast, so I'm glad I got that question in. And I have a couple more here for you, Jack, so I can send you on your way. But I recently read in researching you that your mother, Mary, worked as a lunch lady in Brooklyn when you were growing up. And I also read that former NBA star Stephon Marbury was even one of her kids at the time she worked. So did your mom ever come home with some wild tales from the cafeteria? Because I feel like she must have seen some things or had some funny stories from her time working.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When I started off calling the games for the Raptors, I would see Stephon at the games because he was playing at that time with the Nets, Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And he would come up to me and say, hey, how's your mom, Mr. Armstrong? She's like, he used to always say she was the coolest lunch lady. He always treated me and my brothers so well. He had a tremendous amount of respect for her, and she really liked him and his brothers. I would say that, you know, I think the biggest challenge when you're dealing with working in a school is kids having food fights. that would be ultimately, but she never really got in the middle of any of that. That was the teachers had to deal with that nonsense. But that was the toughest thing is when the kids before the holidays or before the end of the school year, they're getting a little rambunctious and a little rowdy. And that would be the thing that, but it didn't affect her all that much. But she loved doing it, and she did it for a long time. And, you know, thankfully it provided us with an opportunity to eat because she had to work and raise four boys. So it was a job, and thank God she had a job.
And finally, Jack, and I hope this day isn't coming anytime soon, and I ask this question to all of my guests to finish off podcasts, but if your broadcasting career were to come to an end tomorrow, which hopefully isn't the case, what's the one thing you would want your fans and supporters to most remember you for?
Wow, that's interesting. It's funny. I'm not being religious or anything here. I was at Mass on Sunday, and the priest talked about legacy and in his sermon, and said, you know, what do you want to be remembered for? Whether it be in your life, whether it be in your career. And, you know, it got me thinking a little bit. And that's a great question you asked, Chris. I would say that I was joyful, enthusiastic, had fun, you know, was also incredibly professional and serious and respectful of the game of basketball, tried to promote the growth of basketball across Canada, and try to get people that maybe are novices or, you know, could go either way of whether they like the game or not, turned on to the game and maybe develop that love affair with the game. So I guess I would say that I love the game of basketball and that, you know, I tried to translate it as best as I could, that how great a game it is, and try to be an ambassador, not only for the Toronto Raptors, but the NBA and the growth of basketball across Canada. And, you know, if I've even played a small little part, I always joke I'm a caraway seed in the bakery of life. then I feel like I've done a really good job. So I would hope maybe someday when it's all said and done, a bit of a ways down the road, right? Not right now. Maybe they say that about me.
Well, Jack, you're an absolute legend. I think I speak on behalf of all Raptors fans out there when I say I hope you don't slow down or stop doing what you're doing anytime soon. Thank you so much, as always, for your time. Before we sign off, sir, if you have any final words for the Toronto Raptors fans out there listening, the floor is yours.
Well, Chris, I just wanted to say thanks for having me. It's an honor and a privilege to be on with you again. And I'm glad you're doing well. And I'm excited about where the Raptors are positioned. And I feel like there's a good plan in place. And it's great to be back. And it's only going to get better. So I feel like it's a good thing. It's going to be a bit of a bumpy ride at times this year. Ups and downs, but I also think that this group is going to be incredibly entertaining and fun, and there's a good foundation being laid, and I like it. I feel good about what they're doing and where they're going.
And that was my interview with Jack Armstrong. He's on Twitter rarely, but he's on Twitter at HelloJack with 3 O's. He's on Instagram as well. Reverse the words. It's Jack Hello with the 3 O's. Not much for social media, but he's on most Raptors telecasts, of course. He's on TSN. You can't miss him, nor should you want to. He's Jack Armstrong. He's the best. And I thank him once again for his time for this interview. This has been episode 51 of the Walder Sportscast. Please leave a rating and review if you like what you heard today. It helps us out a bunch. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Podbean. If we're anywhere else, that's news to me, but search for the show anyway, because you never know these days. I could be 100 places and not even realize it. Who's on the next show? I have absolutely no clue. I wing this, guys. I'm like the Joker. I just do things. No plans whatsoever. But if there is someone you want me to chat with on the podcast, let me know at Walder Sports. The DMs are always open. For now, that's another one in the books. So as always, I'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Walder Sportscast. Hit that subscribe button on iTunes and follow Chris on both Twitter and Instagram at Walder Sports.